Okay, I'm going to designate Mr. Ron Combs as our official Bible reader this morning. How are you doing today? Good. Glad to have you with us. So, you get to read three texts.
Three texts.
Yeah. So, get somebody on the right and left to help you remember which texts they are. You help him, Kay, with Hebrews 11:22. So when I need Hebrews, just tell him Hebrews 11:22. You remember, Ron, Genesis 45, verses 5, 6, and 7. And you remember the last verse for him in Genesis, the 50th chapter. Now, we might use them or we might not, but if I need them, I want them ready. Okay. Stand up and move around a little bit. My back gets sore. Revenge is sweet. So they say. Now, I don't know if that's true or not. There's certainly been times in my life when I thought revenge was fantastic. In fact, I used to try to tell Sue that when you're in the corporate business world, you thrive on confrontation. If you don't, you get killed. So, but in my later years, I've kind of mellowed a little bit. But I did want to share with you a story of good revenge. Kinda. Used to work for a company called Emergency Networks. Jeff Pruitt, very good friend of mine, he's a business partner of mine today, was national sales manager, and I had the privilege of being national sales trainer for this company. We had 50 offices all across the United States. Well, the board had a takeover by other people that were not happy, and all of a sudden, in one day, there was about 50 of us that were fired. We just had no job. Woke up that morning well employed, making good money, and by 5 o'clock that afternoon we had no job. No severance pay either, nothing. Well, about 4 months later, the original group gets back and takes control of the board, and so we're rehired. Now this is where revenge comes in. Jeff Pruitt, very nice guy, when he was national sales manager, he had a regional manager in the South, Atlanta, Tennessee, all that area, that they just butted heads. And so when we were summarily dismissed within a matter of 2 hours, this gentleman calls Jeff Pruitt up and says, "Never liked you, never stood, cared for you, you got what you deserve, ha ha ha, you're out and I'll be moving up." Well, 4 months later, we're back in power. So the word came down when the papers were signed about 8 o'clock that evening. And at 10 o'clock, Jeff Pruitt takes a flight to Atlanta, gets there to the office before the regional manager got in, and he's sitting in the regional manager's office. Regional manager comes in, says, and I quote, "What the blank, 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 blank are you doing here in my office?" And Mr. Pruitt looks up at him very sweetly and says, "I think you misunderstand things. This is now my office. And here's a policeman, and you now have 15 minutes to get anything out of here that you want." And the guy didn't believe him, so he said, "Well, make a phone call." So that was it. So there's where revenge is sweet. Now, we're going to study somebody today that had a fantastic opportunity to get revenge. Now, vision yourself 17 years old. Life is great for you. You have a daddy that has just spoiled you rotten. You have 10, 11 brothers that are doing all the work. Your daddy has just given you a most beautiful coat. You go around telling your brothers about a dream that you've had, a couple of them, where everybody bows down to you, everybody worships you, you think you're great, and you're 17, you're a teenager, you're skipping along, and life is fantastic. And the next thing you know, You're a slave in Egypt, betrayed by your own brothers, sold off into bondage. Come on in. Have a seat. Glad to have you. You're betrayed by your own flesh and blood, and you are now off to be a slave in Egypt, and most likely back in those days, never be heard again from anybody. Fun time? Now, we all know, we've studied the last 2 or 3 weeks what went on. But I want you to keep in mind 2 points as we go through today's lesson. Number one, Joseph is a type of Jesus Christ. Do not lose sight of that. Joseph is a type of Jesus Christ. And number two, no matter what you do, what happens to you, whatever circumstances you find where you're at, God will never fail you if you will allow Him to lead. Genesis has 50 chapters in it. Being not quite as good as mathematician, not quite as good in math as my friend Dr. Perryman is, 14 chapters of the 50 chapters in Genesis have to do with the story of Joseph. Now, New Math John says that's 28% of that book, strictly with Joseph. Joseph is not the hero in this story. God is the hero in this story. We get the stories mixed up. We think the people are the heroes. It's God. It's always God. The book is not about Joseph. The book is not a history book. It is about God dealing with people just like you and me. And if we'll read that book that way, it becomes a different book. Otherwise, it's just a nice storybook. How do you think that the Joseph's brothers dealt with what they had done to their own brother? What do you think on a day by day by day when they saw the grief of their father, when they saw him crying, they saw that sadness, what do you think went through their mind? Need answers?
Probably.
Pardon?
Probably a little grief. I don't think that they were really sorry, but they probably were a little bit grieved at what they had done.
Okay. Agree with that? Yes.
I think I was impressed with the story that there were some changes that took place in some boys. And as I was reading it this week, that was the part that came across. I think that Jacob saw his brothers, each one of them, you know, say, I'm willing to be the security.
Yep. We're going to come to that. That's right. We're going to come to that. Go ahead.
Maybe that came about as they went through and reflected, on this, that they grew a lot.
Okay. All right, very good. What do you think that they thought between the time they sold Joseph until the time Jacob said to them, go to Egypt? What do you think went through their mind? Now, I heard several others start to speak up, so who else?
Dread of telling their father what happened.
All right.
Guilt.
What do you mean by guilt?
They knew that they had caused their father a great deal of pain, and also their brother, they had no idea what had happened to him.
Okay.
They had remorse, but it was over consequences of their actions.
Okay. What do people tend to do when bad things are happening to them?
Blame somebody else?
That's certainly one way. What else?
They want to
strike out at somebody? What else?
What have I done to cause it?
Exactly. What else?
Try to get it out of your mind.
Try to get it out of your mind. Pull the covers over your head. How do you think these boys, these brothers, handled that in that initial period? I think they tried to put it originally out of their mind. How could they not react when they saw what their father was like? When the very first day they went to their father and said, "Your son, here he is, he's been killed by a wild animal." Can you imagine what this does? This was the idol of this man's heart. So much to the detriment of Joseph. He favored him. What do you think of pain he went through? If there would have been remorse, what do you think the brothers would have done? Let's go get those slave traders and buy him back. Because when they went back and reported he was dead, the slave traders couldn't have gotten too far away. Where do you think God was in this period of time with these brothers?
Yeah.
Where in the story does God say, "You've sowed the seed, now reap it, and I'm leaving you alone"?
Never.
I think he's probably working on their hearts.
Yeah. Went by Judah. Went by Levi. Went by Reuben. Went by Dan. He was there knocking every day, trying to say, "Can't you see what you've done?" Famine comes. No food. Now this is where Patriarchs and Prophets helps us out some. Jacob calls his boys together and says, "Let's go to Egypt and get us some food." What was their reaction? What do you think immediately came to their mind? Nope, don't think so. Could have been. Did they want to go? Not initially. Why? Do you ever want to go where there's a problem? What do you think pops in their mind when they thought of Egypt? Our brother's a slave down there. They didn't want to go. Finally, they had no other choice. Why? There was no food except in Egypt. So we all know the story. They go down. Joseph recognizes them. They don't recognize him. That's not far-fetched. You ever been in a town somewhere, deal, and you come across somebody and you sit there and you try to, "Oh, I think I know that," but they're out of a different setting than you're used to. So they never thought about him. Why? They thought he was a slave. Who in the world would have thought he was the second highest person in Egypt? Joseph recognizes him. Now I have a question to ask you. As my good friend Jeff Pruitt said, I can hardly wait to get on that plane to go down and fire Richard Wells. And he did very dramatically. Why didn't Joseph do likewise?
Probably saw God's handiwork and what was going on.
Okay. What would have been the natural? You're a golfer, correct? You get beat in a golf match. You play the next week. What's your motivation?
Revenge.
Can't be a competitor if you're not, right? You teach golf, right? You want somebody who wants revenge. Human nature. Now, why did Joseph play the games that he played?
He wanted to see if the brothers had changed.
Why didn't he ask them?
He might like
it. He wanted to see if their lives had really changed, if They were the same hard-hearted brothers that he knew back as a child.
Okay, now I want you to get the next point. It's critical. What was the test that he gave his brothers to see if they had changed?
To bring the brother.
Benjamin. The ultimate test was to get his little brother back up there and leave him.
He brings them in.
Not Levi when the others left, but he kept Levi.
Okay. He tells them to bring baby Benjamin, the son. Remember, this was Joseph's true brother. The others were half-brothers. They come in and he seats them by age. Oldest to the youngest. What immediately went through their mind? How did he know this? What went through the brothers' minds when he began to play the games with the money? What did they say? What was their first reaction?
Fear.
Pardon?
Fear.
Fear. What? God is doing what?
Yes.
Getting even with us. It was on their mind the whole time they went from Canaan to Egypt. Joseph is a slave. What did we do? It went through their mind over and over. And the first time they ran across a problem, they stood up and said, "Look what God is doing." God cannot give you the victory over anything until you're willing to allow Him to lead in your life. Until then, He will bring you across the same hurdle time after time after time till you learn that you cannot do it on your own. And here's these brothers going to eat. First thing went into their mind when they got in trouble. Reuben said, "See, I told you. I told you we shouldn't have done this." Immediately. Why? It was on their mind. And who put it on their mind? God was working as hard as He could. Now here comes the test. Had they learned anything? So here they are at a big banquet, seated from the oldest to the youngest. They begin to think, "Man, this is kind of weird." And here comes little baby Benjamin, and he gets five times the food and attention that each one of the brothers are getting. Why did he do that? To see their reaction. Remember, one of the best parts of the stories was everything that Joseph did to the brothers was through an interpreter. And they had no concept that he understood anything. And he was privy to their entire conversation. Finally, he brings the true test. I'm going to put Benjamin as a slave, and I'm going to let you all go home. Just a few years before, was this a problem to the brothers? No. They could have just come back with another story. They could have made it up. They were good at making them up. These were hard-hearted brothers. You have to be hard to sell your brother and sit there for years looking at your father grieving, and it does nothing to your heart. You have to be hard. And the brothers said, "No, no, keep me. Keep me, don't let him go." The very ones that instigated the killing of Joseph was the ones that says, "If you do that, it'll break our father's heart. He will die. Keep me." And let him go. Now, Joseph began to turn away. He began to cry. And he came back and said, I am Joseph, your brother. Still fear. Why did God work this way through these brothers? Why did they go through this exercise over and over again through this to prove? Why? Why did they do that? Why did God choose to direct that way?
God knows human nature, and He also knows that it takes time for us to come around.
It was important for Joseph. It was most important for the brothers to go through the same test as they had gone through previously. 20 years. Been 20 years since this. 20 years ago, they went through the same test that they failed miserably by their own actions 20 years ago. God brings them around till they had the same choice. Sacrifice our little brother for our good, or we have changed. I've said it many times, and I'm going to say it one more time. The judgment in the New Testament by Jesus Christ is and always and has been simply, if you want to know if you're a child of God, the test is very simply, how do you treat your brother? I know of no other test in the four Gospels. It's certainly not the Sabbath. It's certainly not 2300 days. It's not investigative judgment. It's not the Ten Commandments. I know of no other test in the New Testament than Jesus says, how did you treat your brothers? And this was exactly the same test that was given to the brothers of Joseph. Was that same question had to be answered in their lives. How will you treat your brother? He got five times the food. At one time, what would they have said? This ain't fair. They didn't speak good English back there anyway. This ain't fair. Hey, why is he getting more food than us? Then all of a sudden, the cup's found. And here comes the same decision they had 20 years ago. And the brothers stepped to the plate. Why? Was it what they had done in their hearts? Was it what had they changed? It was the working of God. What lessons do we learn? What lessons do you learn from the story of Joseph? Share with me. What lessons do you learn? We've been studying it for 4 weeks.
If you get to trust in God, He can take you through those difficult times. He's in prison.
Yeah. Why is the story, 28% of the book is on Joseph. Look at the ups and downs that he had in his life. 17 years old, carefree, spoiled brat. Sharing with them his dreams, happy. But you see, he did have a relationship with his grandfather Isaac for a short time. And over and over, Isaac had to tell those brothers the story of Jehovah Jireh. God will provide. God will provide. And when Joseph was in that pit, he had a decision to make. And he had to hold on to the only thing that would give him strength. At the age of 17, sold into slavery. God will provide. 3 years he spends as a slave. 10 years he spends in prison. And about the time he's supposed to get out, Because he can foretell dreams, God blesses him. He thinks he's getting out, he's forgotten. Genesis 50, the last verse.
The very last verse?
Yep, I hope it's correct.
Shortly after Joseph died at 110 years of age, and they embalmed him and placed his body in a coffin in Egypt.
Thank you. Do you understand that Joseph could be one of the big pyramid people? You've seen the pyramids, right? Could have been one to Joseph. Hebrews 11:22. I want to show you what was on Joseph's mind during all of this time. Hebrews 11:22. This is the faith chapter. Look at all the things. 28% of the book is on Joseph. What was Paul impressed with the life of Joseph? Of all the things, this is what impressed him.
Joseph also gave evidence of this same faith when, just before he died, he told the Israelites that one day they would leave Egypt, and when they left, they should take his body with them.
Thank you. Why would Paul be impressed with that out of 14 chapters in the Bible? That's the only thing that Paul chooses to say to remember Joseph by. Why? Why didn't he say, and by faith Joseph rejected Potiphar's wife? By faith Joseph ascended to the heights of power. By faith Joseph... Why did he say, by faith Joseph had his bones moved over to Canaan? Why would that be important to Paul? Anybody care to guess?
Earth, but will be moved to a greater place.
I like that. Yes, ma'am?
He had the faith that God was going to bring His people out of Egypt.
Okay, I like that. Anybody else? Joseph had a choice. If his heart was set on this earth, he could have had a great pyramid and been buried, and we would still go to the pyramid of Ramesses and the pyramid of whatever other one and the pyramid of Joseph. If his heart was set on this earth, he never lost track of where he belonged. And when he died, he reminded his brothers before he died, take my bones to the promised land. I remember going to the Ten Commandments as a little boy. One of the things, don't know why, but it struck me, still remember to this day, as they start to leave out of Egypt, there they are carrying the bones of Joseph. Joseph's heart was never, never in this world. If this is your home, if this is your conquest, if this is your life, you're in lots of trouble. Because you better get the revenge factor down and get a little bit of fun out of it here. But Joseph understood one principle. There is a promised land. I don't know how it's going to be. I don't know how we're going to get there. I don't know what it is, but I know one thing. And he is the first to call God Almighty, El Shaddai, the many-breasted one. He says, I do know this. God is the many-breasted one. He has enough nutrition for all of us. He can supply all of our wants. And one day, we're going to the promised land, and you take me with you. If that is your vow, if that is your understanding, then what happens is put things into God's hands and let Him lead your life. The surety is, don't care if you're wondering about a piece of paper and think enough of God to say, give me some relief. If you're wondering about a gift card, if you're wondering about you or your family, put yourself into the hands of God. Because we're just pilgrims here. Prime Minister of Egypt. Main honcho. CEO. And he never lost sight. Most important thing he had when he began to face death was not how big of a monument are you going to build me? What are you going to do? How long am I going to lie in state? When you go to the promised land, take my bones with me. Jesus Christ. Read 45, 5 to 7. Genesis.
You can now stop condemning yourselves over what you did.
This is Joseph speaking.
You can now stop condemning yourselves over what you did in a fit of anger when you sold me to the Ishmaelites. God has turned what you did into a blessing to preserve your lives. This is only the second year of famine, and there are still 5 more years to go during which there will be no plowing, sowing, or reaping. God took advantage of your anger and sent me here to preserve our lives.
Stop there. God took horrible circumstances. And from that, He sent a 17-year-old boy who trusted Him enough. He sent him to Egypt to be a redeemer for God's people. Now, was that an easy road? They became slaves themselves. God is interested in the day-by-day trials that go on in your life. The big picture He's interested in is you to spend eternity with Him. He sent Joseph as a redeemer to His promised children who one day, even going through slavery, dragging them through the wilderness for 40 years, they still got to the promised land. God sent Jesus Christ as a redeemer to us to show us what life is like, who one day, no matter what trials we go through, what not, my heart goes out to your mother-in-law. I don't know the answers. Altus Hayes, great person. That's a little bit easier to understand because he was at the end of the rainbow to speak of. Young Mike, who died just a couple of weeks ago, at this side of the rainbow. I trust God. I don't know the answers. Joseph didn't know the answers. He trusted Father. He trusted his Father. Why? Because God is interested in every one of our lives, our families, our sorrows, our problems, our cares, and our wants. And when we get to heaven, this is the promise that we have. If we could see the end from the beginning, we would not change one thing. That's God's promise to everyone in this class. If we could see the end from the beginning, we would not change one thing. Problems come. Cry to God. He invites you to say, I don't know why. Jesus Christ Himself in the Garden of Gethsemane fell to the ground, no strength, sweating blood, saying, if there's any way but this, let's have it a different way. There's nothing wrong with saying that to your Heavenly Father. But you must end it as Jesus did. Nevertheless, I will do your will. That's why there's 14 chapters, 28% of the book on Joseph. God was there every step of the way in his life. That's easy to understand. But he was there every step of the way of those dirty, rotten brothers. And when it ended up, what will you do with Benjamin? Take me, for my brother will die if you take him. And someday God's going to say to you, what do you do with your brother and sister? And your answer will be, Father in heaven, thank you for the book that tells us about Joseph. But thank you most for what you've done in my life. Many times unworthy. But when I turned, you were there. And I know this class shares the same experience because that's the kind of God you are. Amen.